my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Everyone, welcome to episode 83 of My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, and we are actually recording this moments after Money in the Bank. I stayed up late to do that. I am actually taking off work on Monday, so I didn't call in. I'm using my Memorial Day holiday, so it's all on the up and up. But anyway, Chad, I want to start off. Chad's on the phone, or joining me via Skype, and WWE all night, all week really has been touting this as being the greatest Money in the Bank pay-per-view event of all time. Scale of 1 to 10, or I don't know how you want to rate it, was it the greatest of all time?
In my opinion, no. And I don't think you can call something the greatest of all time before it happens. During the show, as I was live-tweeting, at one point I did tweet towards Michael Cole asking, when was it going to become the greatest as opposed to the strongest on paper Money in the Bank? Because I think going in, the lineup was very strong and you would expect a good show. But the event has to happen before you can call it the greatest. And now that it's over, I think the ending of the show will raise people's opinion of it. But I think if you take it as a collective whole, including the pre-show, I would grade this probably a C-plus show just because there was so much that dragged on the first half and there were things within the big matches that drug those matches down.
Yeah, and let's talk about that. The first point that I want to make is WWE has put out that they are not going to be restricted to the, I guess we were getting about a 2 hour, 45 minute, 2 hour, 50 minute pay-per-view back when it was a traditional pay-per-view. And even when there were some on the network, we were still kind of staying in that time frame. Tonight, Sunday night's event, Money in the Bank, went well past 10 o'clock Central Time. I'm talking Central Time here. Pre-show started at 6, so that's well over 4 hours. And there were two matches in the pre-show. So, I mean, you can say, oh, we'll skip the pre-show, but there are still two matches within that. I think a lot of people, at least on Twitter, it seemed like were bored or thought that it was dragging on too long. And I tend to agree with that. I think 4 hours is way too long, especially when it just was not, I could not get into the event as a whole. And like you said, the last 3 minutes kind of changed my opinion, but I'm with you. I would give it probably a C to a C plus as well overall, but the last 3 minutes were great. But that being said, there were 4 hours that got us to that point.
Yeah, and I think too, I mean, I saw on the news sites over the last week or so that WWE had made the announcements to cable companies or pay-per-view providers that shows were going to start going long. And it's because I think they're on the network, they're not restricted as such. And I think it's a way also to try to fully move away from pay-per-view and make all these shows, people watching them on the network. But I think they did a poor job in relaying that to fans.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you read the Twitter timeline starting about a half hour before where the show would have normally ended, everybody's like, oh, are they cutting the U.S. title match? You know, are they going to have enough time? Like, fans didn't seem to know that the show was going to go long.
Yeah.
And I think that this has obviously been a decision WWE made a few weeks ago, at least. They could have used that time to really hammer home that, you know, if you watch the show on the network now, we're not going to be constrained by time, you know, by the 3-hour time limit, and shows may go longer.
Yeah.
There's no, and on one hand, I like that because it does give the show a bit of unpredictability in the ending, because before, you know, like, oh, it's, you know, almost, well, you know, out here a show runs from 5 to 8. So it's like, oh, it's 7:49. This match is going to be ending within the next 2 or 3 minutes. Whereas now you can build up to a fresh ending because you don't know when it's going to end. But I think, one, I think WWE did a poor job in making this decision known. And two, yeah, 4 hours is a long time without an intermission. Most independent shows will run, you know, 4 or 4.5 hours. I think it's been a while since I've been to an indie show. But you throw in a 15 to 30 minute intermission, depending on the promotion and how quickly people get back to their seats. And that breaks it up, although I still think 4.5 hours is way too long.
Yeah, well, so we don't have to put an intermission in this podcast. Let's start breaking it down.
Okay, well, I have another point, but I'll touch on it when we get to that match.
So. Okay, all right. Well, we already kind of started at the top, so let's just stay there. And obviously, Dean Ambrose cashing in. Were you surprised by this? I mean, obviously he won the Money in the Bank ladder match. There was a lot of speculation online before this even happened that they were going to go that way. I thought, even after he won, I was kind of surprised by the cash-in, thinking that they would try to milk this whole Shield thing a little longer and draw it out. But now they can, I guess, technically say that all three members of the Shield held the World Heavyweight Championship in the same night.
Yeah, I was surprised that he did cash in so soon. I think they're, on the one hand, I am glad he did, because in my opinion, the Money in the Bank briefcase has kind of played out like, I'm tired of the, oh, he's going to cash in. No, he's not. Oh, he is. No, he's not. And now we don't have to worry about that for the next year.
Yeah.
I think with the brand split coming up, it made sense to get the Money in the Bank briefcase out of the way before the split.
Sure.
And this is going back to the point of running long. I have no problem with the show running long if there's an excuse or a reason for it to happen. And the fact that the Reigns Rollins match seemed to drag on forever. I don't think the run over was necessary. But once Ambrose came out and cashed in, that would have made sense for the show going over 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if WWE is going to have shows run long, there needs to be a reason. Why?
Well, and this may also, and I'm going back to it now too, but this may also give some guys and gals a little face time on these events that maybe wouldn't normally if they're going to add another match or two.
Yeah.
So I guess it's not all a bad thing, but it's how they execute it, like you said.
Yeah, true. And real quick, I don't know how it's coming out on your end. Your voice is kind of fluctuating, going really soft or really loud. I don't know if that's going to impact the quality of this podcast when people listen to it, but just throwing that out there.
Okay. I mean, it looks like it's reading fine, so we'll see here. So, obviously, we have a new World Heavyweight Champion in Dean Ambrose. The match leading up to that match was the U.S. title match that you said a lot of people were tweeting, is this even happening? Some people seemed a bit upset that they had O'Neal tap out on Father's Day in front of his kids. But, you know, I think there's still some, I don't know for sure, but it seems like there's still possibly some, I don't want to say retribution, but obviously he pissed off Vince McMahon a while back and got suspended. So, I mean, there's obviously still perhaps some friction from that. I don't know, but there have been talk that Titus O'Neil is leaving WWE. So why would you have him win the championship?
Yeah. Well, I was afraid that, because it was Father's Day, and he had his kids there, and Titus does a lot of good publicity outside of the company, I was really expecting them to give them his moment of winning the title and then quickly getting it back to Rusev either tomorrow or in the coming weeks. So I'm glad they didn't go that route. I think the match was, the match was too long for what it should have been. But in my mind, I would be using this time to build Rusev up as a more of a monster heel. And I have to admit that during that match, I was flipping back and forth between the NBA final game, which I think was more rigged than a WWE show. But yeah, this match, the match was what it was. I just think it went too long, especially, as we've said, when you're going to drag a show out for over 4 hours, you need more action to justify it.
And Rusev, in my opinion, his next opponent needs to be someone from that upper mid-card and not, you know, not a knock against Titus O'Neil or Zack Ryder or Jack Swagger, but it needs to be someone
established,
exactly. And I don't know who that would be. I don't have a name right off the top of my head, but it needs to be someone who, you know, can give Rusev some credibility as being the monster United States champion that we have kind of seen him being developed as. Now, AJ Styles beat John Cena, of course, help from the club in one of the first of two ref bumps of the night. I know you tweeted something about it being an Impact, TNA Impact type finish. The match was good. The match itself was good. I hated the finish, and I think a lot of people online agree with that.
Yeah, what I liked about this match is both AJ and Cena had counters for moves that their opponents do on a regular basis, which I think adds to a realism factor in wrestling. And I would like to see more of that. The match was, you have two of the top guys for the last 10 years. You should get a good match, good to great match out of them when you put them together. So the match was as good as I expected. The ending was such a letdown because now it's going to be, well, AJ can't win on his own. And then if Cena comes back and wins the next match and the rubber match, as he's done in previous feuds, you haven't been, you know, it's like the Kevin Owens situation or the Rusev. It's like, okay, yeah, you got one win, but at the end of the day, when the feud's over, you're still in the same place. And I was just surprised that Cena stayed down to only one Magic Killer from the club because those guys haven't been able to beat anybody in the last 2 months with that move. So the fact that it took down, you know, the top star in WWE, although Del Rio did beat Cena back in October with one kick to the face, so maybe Cena's losing it a bit.
Yeah, we've found his Achilles heel. Now, Apollo Crews defeated Sheamus in a match that I forgot was a part of this event. And that's not a knock, and it makes me sound kind of like an ass when I say that. That's not a dig at Sheamus nor Apollo Crews. And I don't watch Raw and SmackDown on a regular basis. I usually catch the highlights on the app. So, I still like Apollo Crews. I feel like he, though, is one of those guys who they brought up from NXT too quick. And he's still kind of finding his footing on the main roster.
Yeah, when I was watching that match, my thought was, I believe it was about 4 years ago when we were doing the From the Raptors radio, I had him picked, when he was known as UHA Nation, as the breakout star of the future, one to keep your eye on. And during his match, I was just asking myself, why did I pick him for that? And I know I'd seen him on the indies, and there was something about him that really jumped out at me. But what I've seen of him in WWE, even in NXT, I haven't seen that same spark. And I think part of it goes to not having a character. He's just this, he's Apollo Crews. He comes out, he smiles, he wrestles. That's Apollo Crews.
Yeah.
So I think there is something missing with him. And I think he has the potential to be there. And I think he has more potential than, say, Baron Corbin. But I don't. But yes, there's something missing. And that match with Sheamus, it came down to that finish where Sheamus hit his finishing move, Apollo kicks out, and then pins Sheamus with a roll-up. And I saw somebody had put on Twitter that a roll-up now in WWE is more of a finishing move than actual finishing moves. People will kick out of spears, attitude adjustments, styles clashes, whatever. But a roll-up wins like 90% of the time now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't know what the actual statistic is, but yeah, I agree. That tends to be happening a lot more than I think it used to. Especially, yeah, it's a good comparison to how the finishing maneuvers are not. You know, we saw that with the AJ and Cena match, which it didn't bother me as much as it normally does because those are two top guys. This was a quote-unquote WrestleMania quality match, as Renee Young put it on the pre-show. So I didn't have a problem with it there. But you're right about Apollo Crews. He's got the potential, obviously. He's got the talent. They just need to do something to kind of light a fire under him, I guess. Now, the women were in a tag team match, no women's championship match defended, but Dana Brooks and Charlotte defeating Natalya and Becky Lynch. And I thought Becky Lynch would be the one to turn on Natty. It makes more sense, though, because, you know, Becky Lynch, I think, is obviously probably your top babyface, at least right now. Sasha Banks kind of waiting in the wings, I think. She'll probably be the next contender. But it's interesting to me because it seems like they're building another women's storyline that doesn't involve the championship, which is something WWE has been notoriously famous for not doing.
Yeah, well, and I also think that having Becky turn, I mean, I don't know if Natty is now going to become friends with Charlotte, but given how dynamics work, I would expect that. And if it was Becky who turned and became friends with Charlotte, then it just kind of negates like the last few months of Charlotte turning on Becky. So by WWE logic, I'm surprised it didn't happen that way. But yeah, I don't know. I think Natty is someone, like we were talking with Apollo Crews, who is talented, but there's just something. I don't know if it's just so many years of not doing anything with her where she's kind of stale, and hopefully this will spark some change and some interest, and she'll do something with this heel turn.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. No, I've read reports that Sasha Banks has had a concussion, or they've kept her off TV because they don't want her stock to go down while they wait to put her into a feud for the title. I don't know the full reasoning is, but it seems like the women's title and the women's division is just kind of floundering right now, and the Divas Revolution has kind of died out. So hopefully with this upcoming brand split, if they keep the women all on one show, hopefully they can build more of a division, and like you said, have a feud for the title, have secondary feuds that don't involve the title. And we'll see where it goes. But overall, I thought this match was a match. Again, there wasn't, most of the undercard, there was nothing really exciting to write home about. It was just kind of there. And I also think that the WWE booking of having these people face off week after week on Raw and SmackDown hurts when it comes to the actual pay-per-view, because you're not giving us anything fresh.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't mind watching a four-hour pay-per-view if I hadn't seen some of this stuff. And it may not even necessarily be a match, per se, but even when you have Natty and Charlotte confront each other, or, you know, I mean, this was one that has kind of been spinning since right after WrestleMania. And then, of course, this next match, Baron Corbin and Dolph Ziggler, started the night after WrestleMania, and I think we both have pretty strong opinions about how this has gone. And you talked about Natty just kind of being there and kind of, you know, floundered and, you know, the way she's been presented and has gone stale. I think, you know, I don't know if you want to say Natalya has Dolph Ziggler syndrome or Dolph Ziggler has Natalya syndrome, because I think that they're almost two peas in a pod in terms of, you know, I was very high on both of these individuals at one point, and just the way they've been presented and, you know, I don't know if you want to say screwed over, but I felt like Dolph Ziggler kind of had the whole world in his hands, no offense to Bray Wyatt, at one point, and it all just kind of went away. And I don't know if it's because, you know, I've read rumors that he tweeted something negative about the company, he's got a bad attitude, whatever it is, but that spark with Dolph Ziggler seemed to be snuffed out pretty bad when Baron Corbin beat him.
Yeah, Ziggler's stock has fallen so far in the last 3 years. It's not even funny. Corbin, as I think I've said on every pay-per-view since he's debuted, or every podcast we've talked about him since he's debuted, he is the new era's Randy Orton. I just find him bland. There's nothing exciting about him, and he may have potential to be something big in a few years. You know, he might have Stone Cold Syndrome, where, you know, when the Ringmaster showed up, no one would have expected him to be the biggest star of the of his era.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, he's just not. There is nothing clicking for me with Baron Corbin. He just looks not like a deer in a headlight, but just there's no energy from him. There's no. He's just a giant body with long wet hair and bad tattoos.
Yeah, there's no it factor there yet. And again, no. Not knocking the guy, but you know, we've been watching this more than 30 years each, and I just I agree with you. There's no spark. There's no connection. And if you are a Baron Corbin fan, let us know. We're not being snarky or sarcastic about this. What is it about Baron Corbin that you know makes you a fan? Why do you want to see him on the main roster and one day competing perhaps for the World Heavyweight Championship? And that was the thing I tweeted out, was at least he wasn't in the ladder match, you know, to potentially win that briefcase, because, you know, he won the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. You know, what's next for him? So
yeah, but I mean, at least if he would have been in that match, we wouldn't have had to set through Corbin Ziggler version 800 or whatever they're up to now. So
yeah, that is definitely
both ways.
Yeah, absolutely. The opener for the main show, I guess, because, you know, I guess they do classify the kickoff differently, was the four-way tag team championship match, which was the New Day defending and actually retaining against the Club, Enzo and Cass, and the Vaudevillains. I expected this one to go with New Day winning it, but I think a lot of people commented on it, and we don't typically criticize, you know, work and whatnot, but this match was pretty sloppy, I thought, at several different times.
Yeah, as I texted you during the show, I would not be surprised to see this be the main focus of the next Botchamania episode. I wasn't even that concerned with the blown spots throughout the match, but the ending to this match just, it, as to use a JR-ism, was bowling shoe ugly. You know, Big E had Carl Anderson up for his finishing move, for Big E's finishing move. Luke Gallows is standing 5 feet away from him in the ring, just looking at him. And you're like, okay, he's going to prevent Big E from doing this finishing move. But no, Luke then runs over and I think goes towards the Vaudevillains, leaving Big E alone to do his move and pin Carl Anderson. Like, it made no sense in the context of the match, and it was bad.
There were parts, though, that I did find entertaining within the match. I mean, it wasn't all horrible by any means, but
no, yeah.
there was one point, and you clarified it, but to me, it looked like when Enzo did this, I think he did the splash off the top rope or off of Big Cass. I don't remember how they set it up. But anyway, it appeared as if the referee had counted three before, and I think it was Gallows again who was supposed to pull Enzo out or something. And it just seemed like it was a little too close to a three count, and I think a lot of people kind of reacted that way online.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like even I was confused myself, and then I don't know, I'd have to go back and watch the match again, but I don't know if the referee, when he came down to make the count, if he hit the mat going down, and people took that as the one, and then he started, or if he did count to three, and they botched the pin, I don't. But yes, there was a lot in that match that was not very good given the people involved.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, at least Enzo didn't walk out here with another concussion. So
this is true. Now, are you thinking still SummerSlam, big picture, Enzo and Big Cash getting their, or Big Cass getting their own championship match against New Day?
I would. I think given those are your two biggest tag teams right now, and you're going into your biggest show of the summer in Enzo and Cass's backyard, like that just, you have them win the titles at SummerSlam, I think, yeah, you have license to print money for the next 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, I agree, and it'll be interesting to see what happens at Battleground, which is coming up at the end of July, to obviously be the lead to SummerSlam. And I don't know the date for sure, but the draft or whatever, the switchover for SmackDown and whatnot, that's all coming up very soon here in July, isn't it?
The live SmackDown goes live on July 19th.
Okay.
I believe Battleground would be...
I think it's the 24th. I think it's that 24th, Sunday.
Yeah. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Again, we don't know anything about a draft or a roster split. So the next few weeks should be interesting. We'll see how...
Since we're talking about the draft, too, I want to plug the blog. We teamed up for a blog. We each picked 5 superstars from the past that has parted ways with WWE who could be brought back. WWE, of course, is dropping hints that they were going to bring back some folks. So we kind of set some rules, and they're not contracted with other companies right now. These are all kind of free agents, if you will. Chad went 5 wrestlers. I threw a manager in and a woman's wrestler as well. So head over to my123cents.com and check that out. Now the pre-show, which there were 3 tag team matches in a row, if you count the pre-show too, with the Dudleys, I wrote this down wrong, the Lucha Dragons defeated the Dudleys. Not a big surprise there. I think the Dudleys, everybody has kind of accepted the fact that they've been brought in to kind of help put over some of this other talent.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
The Dudleys losing to Lucha Dragons, not a big surprise there, as Dudleys have been kind of, I think established that they're here now to kind of put guys over.
Yes, I agree. And that's a point that I tweeted out as well during the show, is I'm a little disappointed. I thought Bully Ray in TNA was like a really strong character, and Bubba Ray had very well redeveloped himself as a singles wrestler, and it saddens me now that the Dudleys are more now just on a nostalgia trip. Like, instead of coming back to WWE and updating their own persona and being a team, because I think both members of the team can still go. Yeah, they're like, to date ourselves in a reference, they're like the Pedro Morales and SD Jones of the Attitude Era.
I don't know that I'd go that extreme, but yeah, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, they're former champs who are now, and I mean, that's fine if you're going to use them that way and you put them on the pre-show so you don't take it, but it would be nice if they updated their shtick.
How about a Tito Santana, Tony Garea? They're former tag team champions.
Okay, yeah, you can go that one too. Yeah, Lucha Dragons, again, if this meant that the Lucha Dragons were going to be elevated in that tag team division or even get maybe a storyline or a feud to come out of this, great. Otherwise, you just have 2 teams that are just there. And it's kind of like the women's division. You have a feud built around the title, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the division needs to be given more time, or more attention, I should say.
Now, on the other end of that spectrum, Golden Truth, which you tweeted and I found interesting, beating Breeze Dango, which, you know, R-Truth and Goldust both well into their 40s. Beating 2 guys who are still, you know, probably mid to late 20s, early 30s, obviously more of a new era, future is now kind of tag team. They've got the matching tights now. I mean, they seem to work well together and seem like they were kind of going in a direction with them. But yeah, I agree. I don't necessarily think that this was the best idea. But, you know, I also am a Goldust fan and will be forever. So I wasn't disappointed to see him win here.
Yeah, I mean, again, if you're going to build up the teams and actually do something with them, maybe it would hurt. It would have hurt. I'm going to keep calling them Fabrice. Fabrice Dango to lose this match. But in the grand scheme of things, no one, I mean, probably less than half your audience saw this match. They're not going to mention it probably on Raw unless they do a rematch. So Breezango losing isn't that big of a deal. To me, the biggest, I think, insult here was the whole storyline where Breezango were tanning and Golden Truth turned up the heat, the intensity of their tanning bed, and so now they're all sunburned and they're peeling, and they anytime they got touched, they would be hurt. It just... It's one of those things that when you kick around the idea to yourself, you're like, oh, that'd be funny, but in execution, like, you don't like, oh, this would be funny, haha. It'd be like, oh, this would be funny, like, this is a dumb, funny segment.
Right.
It's a good third. Like, it's not something that you actually put on TV and run with.
Yeah. I agree. It's almost like the feuding over the shampoo commercial that Edge and Booker T did, or spilling the coffee like Kane and Jericho did. So,
yeah, and I do think that now that if they're going to keep Breeze and Fandango as an actual tag team, it is another solid tag team to add to the tag team division. And neither one was doing anything before. I think it actually helps both guys maybe extend their WWE career a bit.
I totally agree, and I mentioned that in my picks for adding former talents to the current roster. So, Chad, as we kind of wind things down, anything else you want to add? Anything else that's on your mind?
I mean, we really didn't discuss Reigns Rollins that much, which is fine. But I do have to point out that the spear into the pedigree move was one of the coolest things that I think I've seen all year.
I was going to say that definitely was, if not the move of the night, one of the definitely top three or four moves of the night for sure for me as well.
Yeah, I think, again, now I am interested now to see where they go with Ambrose as champion, because obviously Reigns will want to invoke his title rematch clause. Rollins will probably do the same because I guess he was technically champion, so he should get a rematch. I don't know what, you know, at Battleground, is there going to be some type of gimmick? Is it going to be a gimmick pay-per-view? I'm curious now for Raw to see Raw and see where they go for the next month. But I think we can all rejoice, though, in the fact that Roman Reigns is no longer the guy.
Right. Now, do you think they wait till SummerSlam to do this internet wet dream match of Rollins, Reigns, and Ambrose as a triple threat?
If I were booking, I would, but given how WWE likes to run through things quickly, I could see them doing it both at Battleground and at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised at Battleground if we get Jericho versus Ambrose for the title and keep that feud going. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens. But yes, I think eventually we are going to get that triple threat. And unfortunately, probably Roman Reigns will win the title back.
Yeah, as we say, time will tell. Well, fans, thanks for listening to this episode of My 1-2-3 Cents. I also want to direct you over to YouTube. Check out my quick interview with Double J Jeff Jarrett. He was recently here in Southern Illinois. We'll be back in Southern Illinois on July 1st for Global Force Wrestling. Colt Cabana, Mickey James, Kevin Nash, Swoggle, several different talents still associated with Global Force as well will be a part of that show. So head on over to youtube.com/my123cents, and of course, all of our social media sites as well, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks for listening to this episode of My 1-2-3 Cents.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.